This is a podcast from BBC Radio's news and sports station,
5Live.
To find out more about 5Live and its sister service, 5Live Sports Extra, go online.
bbc.co.uk/5Live.
Mark Kermode is away giving his opinions a well-earned rest, and we have the film editor of the Radio Times, the one and only Andrew Collins, who is here. How are you doing, Andrew?
Hello, I'm very well. Are you okay?
Yes, very good. Happy New Year to you.
Yeah, and I don't think Mark will be giving his opinions a rest. He just won't be giving them here.
That's right. He's probably sitting at home with his family gathered round, and he's lecturing them on all the new releases.
Yeah, of course. And it's in his blood.
In fact, he'll probably call in.
Yeah, well, I hope he does. I'm actually going to be Mark Kermode on News 24 after I'm done here. And so I'm wearing a suit. Not actually at the moment, but I will be wearing a suit. So I feel in some ways I'm kind of morphing into him.
But the problem is that we're being live streamed at the moment.
Yeah, I know.
So you're looking all scruffy for the radio, but then you smarten yourself up.
I've got
up
a nice jacket out there. There's no point in putting a jacket on in the studio, is there?
We have.
Don't want to peak too early.
What's a lineup of movies come out in the first week of January? I mean, is it a good...
It's a funny time. I mean, you know, they stuck out I Am Legend on Boxing Day. It's an interesting thing to put a film out on Boxing Day, because I don't know about you, but I wouldn't go to the cinema in that period between Christmas and New Year, really. You just want to relax, don't you, and see family and friends. Some people like to go to the cinema, so they always stick one decent film out, which this year was Will Smith in I Am Legend. So I'm sure people will have been to see that.
But, yeah, I think there is a space for something which has got nothing to do with Christmas. You get to, like, 3 or 4 days after, because you're thinking, I want to go and see something with an olive blasting going on. Starship Troopers came out on Boxing Day.
Yeah, there you go.
And think, that's the kind of film you want.
Yeah, it's like putting out a record at that time of year and it going to number one, like Iron Maiden's Bring Your Daughter to the Slaughter did, which went straight to number one because there's nothing out to buy.
Based on very few sales.
In those old days when people bought records, not now, it would make any difference.
Now, being the Radio Times film editor, presumably you've just gone through your most exhausting period.
I say mine, our. Yeah, the team at Radio Times bust a gut. And in fact, bust a gut just before Christmas so that they can have some time off at Christmas, which is why you get that overlap of Radio Times is coming out in December and then the big double issue comes out, and then they can actually have a couple of days off before picking up with the new year. So I was started on the new year before Christmas.
Do people still obsess about the movies that are on television as they used to? Because it used to be like one of the prime TV focuses is what would be the big movie that was on Christmas Day.
Because there was nowhere else to see it. When I was a kid, I went to see The Poseidon Adventure at the cinema, and it really blew my mind. And I had to wait then 6 years to see it again when it appeared on television for the first time, because there was no other way of seeing it. If it wasn't on at the cinema, you weren't watching it. Now, of course, you know, they come out on DVD within days of being released at the cinema. So, yeah, clearly some of the shine has come off it. But Christmas is a traditional time. People do things at Christmas they wouldn't do any of the other time of the year. You know, like look at lights and be kind of charmed by them. Lights, look, there's some lights. And they will sit down and watch a film together on Christmas Day.
Alice in the City is out. Lust, Caution, P.S. I Love You, amongst...
It's not a great selection, although there are two good films amongst those you've mentioned, and both are foreign language, which I think is good. It's a good sort of a lot of roughage this week, and next week the year actually starts. When is Mark back next week?
I've got no idea.
I imagine
almost
he will be,
certainly.
Because it all starts next week.
What do you mean by a bit of roughage, then, just in movie
terms? You know,
that
people will always look at world cinema, or always did look at world cinema, as something you ought to go and see occasionally, which I've certainly used to think when I was a younger man, and I've completely flipped around now to actually think that, you know, there's nothing special about going to see a film with another language in it. In fact, just go and see it, and it turns out to be just as good as an American or English language film. It's no surprise, but you know, that's just the way the cookie has crumbled this week.
We will amble through the box office top 10 this week. At 10, Mr. Megorium's Wonder Emporium.
You are looking here at films that are aimed at the family. It's about a toy shop owned by a 243-year-old man played by Dustin Hoffman, who bequeaths it to Natalie Portman. Natalie Portman usually seen in kind of edgy indie things, and obviously proving that she can do family stuff as well. Magical, if you like films about toys. And people do at this time of year. Probably not now.
Now, we've got an interesting thing. Number 9, P.S. I Love You, which... And that's based on a very limited release, because we're going to review it in just a moment, but it's already in the 10.
Must be pretty limited, because it's out today. And as far as I can't find any notion of it out anywhere else, it must have been some previews. I guess they put some preview screenings on in the week for lonely, sad, single people.
So if you are lonely, sad and single and you've seen it, by all means join in with your review, mail at bbc.co.uk. Kite Runner at 8,
That's good. That's an American film directed by a Swiss director, Mark Forster, about set mostly in Afghanistan. And it's about a boy who grew up there, moved to California, goes back to help the son of his old childhood friend. And now, of course, the country is under Taliban rule. And so it's a very different place. Very, very good.
Balls of Fury at number seven.
Yeah, martial arts and table tennis, which must have seemed like an extremely good pitch when they did it. It stars a bloke who I've never heard of. It's a comedy, by the way. I imagine this bloke must have been on Saturday Night Live, but apparently he wasn't. He's called Dan Fogler. I don't know where he came from, but he's starring in a film.
And it's Balls of Fury, and it's at number seven. Bee movie at six?
That's more like it. That's Jerry Seinfeld co-writing and starring in this animation about a bee who basically busts out of the hive and falls in love with a human woman, which is odd, the sort of thing you'd find in a Channel 4 documentary. And then there's a kind of legal drama about who owns Honey, a very high-quality intellectual child's animation film, so adults can see it.
Yeah, well, and I was taken along to see Alvin and the Chipmunks this week.
Buy some chipmunks.
It's this week's number five.
Yeah, I can understand why.
The most peculiar thing about this is there are some scenes early on in which are filmed outdoors where they chop down the tree, which has got the chipmunks in it, and they're dragged in. Well, it looks as though it's been taken from an old Lassie film filmed about 40 years ago.
The thing is, you can see effects that were done a couple of years ago and they already look out of date. So you expect the best, don't you, from your modern film? You don't want to see lumpy-looking stuff like that. And anyway, this is mainly a cautionary tale about the music industry, disguised as a kids' movie about chipmunks and the bloke from My Name Is Earl. But really, it just says, careful when you sign, your band signs to a record industry executive, they're out to get you and suck your blood.
There's a sequence over the titles at the beginning where it tells you who's doing the voiceover, who are being the voice of the chipmunks. And,
yes,
of course, normally if you get a voiceover gig in one of these films, it's a big, big deal and worth a lot of money, except that, of course, because they're all on helium and it's being adjusted so that you can't recognise who they are, you kind of think, well, who cares?
Which is why it's nobody you've ever heard of, because Eddie Murphy is not going to do the voice of a chipmunk.
It could have been you and me.
Yeah.
For all you know, it could just be one person. So Alvin and the Chipmunks, number five. And Trinians at number four.
Oh, dearie me. I mean, I can't see why anyone has been to see this. They obviously have. I would say it's a remake, obviously, of the St. Trinian's films, which just don't work. And the whole thing was predicated on blokes finding girls in school uniforms sexy, which is dangerous ground anyway. And so I say better to hang around a hospital and try and catch that vomiting fever.
I am reliably informed that 14-year-old girls find it very, very entertaining.
There you go.
Indeed.
Good. I don't think they should let men in to see it.
Enchanted at number three.
Enchanted is very clever, actually. It's a bit like Shrek in the sense that it takes fairy tales and sort of transplant them and is very clever about them, and stars Amy Adams as a princess who goes from sort of Disney World into New York, modern-day New York, and has to deal with life there. She's going to be famous, Amy Adams, if she isn't already.
That's number three. And at number two, it's The Golden Compass.
Yes, that's high-quality stuff. It's basically Philip Pullman's number of books, which are going to take over when Harry Potter's run out, which will happen in a couple of years. I imagine this will go on and on. And it's kind of slightly more grown up than Harry Potter. And it's got big polar bears in.
And the UK's number one is the aforementioned I Am Legend.
The Boxing Day release, when Will Smith is the only man alive after an apocalypse, and this was the only film released on that day. It's quite sort of symbolic in its own way. And it's been made before. It was once called The Omega Man with Charlton Heston in the 70s. Before that, Vincent Price did a version of it. And it's one of those things, really. It's brilliantly done. A lot of CGI in it, but a lot of it is done in actual streets of New York without any traffic and people on them, which is an amazing thing to see.
And in your opinion, is the trap that set for Will Smith, where the dummy is placed. There's a very confusing dummy. It's moved out of sequence. Yeah. He goes to have a look at it, and then he's caught up in some hideous trap.
People.
Well, I don't know. I was confused.
No, well, you know, it is a confusing film. It looks to me like they've chopped down a much longer film because it really speeds up at the end. Don't you not think?
I was somewhat confused by whether the Nightcrawlers were more intelligent than we were being led to believe.
Yeah, but it's a slightly confusing film, held together by Will Smith, who's a charming individual and a lovely dog, of course.
If you can help, Mayo at bbc.co.uk. Reviews coming up in just a moment. Pauline is back now. Reviews coming up from Andrew Collins. He's the film editor of the Radio Times. Before the reviews start, let me just thank a number of people for emailing based on our Christmas show that we did, Andrew. And there was a little sequence we did some best of stuff from the year, and we revisited a game which we played many months ago, started by a listener who had seen on his travels around the world a post, as I remember it, for Dead Clam.
Yes.
Clearly a typo for Dead Calm, but just set him off thinking on a whole number of other ideas.
That's very good typos, yeah.
And famously we got snacks on a plane, which was followed by snakes on a plank. So there's a whole bunch of stuff that came in, and Barry Barry Clark says, "Simon, I missed the original show. Attracted a lot of strange looks in the gym, though, listening to the Top 10 podcast. One your listeners missed, or not read out anyway, Sheepless in Seattle," which we liked. And Tim, who's a librarian at Trevelyan College at Durham University, says, "Finally caught up with the Films of the Year podcast and heard for the first time the wonderful movie Typo Game. I know this is a rather late submission, but thought you might be entertained by Pyrites of the Caribbean, Fool's Gold."
Yep.
Smart. "The Golden Compost." And topically for today's reviews, Rust Caution, a health and safety film, which is an intriguing idea. We'll get to Lust Caution later, and who knows, we may well even play that game in the remaining 19 minutes that we have left. As far as new films are concerned, Andrew, what's caught your eye? What do you want to go with first?
Well, I think we should go with Lust Caution. Lust comma Caution, as the poster title has it. It's a Chinese film. It's Ang Lee, who is best known for making Crouching Tiger, Hidden Dragon, the most successful Chinese film ever made internationally. And really amazing that a film like that, which was a martial arts film sort of set in ancient China, could do so much box office around the world. And he's an interesting figure, Ang Lee, born in Taiwan but educated in America. And most of his films are English language films, like The Ice Storm and Sense and Sensibility and The Hulk, which we gloss over. And now here he is with Lust Caution, again going back to his roots, and it's a wartime espionage thriller set in Japanese occupied Shanghai and Hong Kong. And what do you know about it already? Because there's one thing that everybody knows about it.
About Lust Caution?
Yes.
Well, I know quite a lot because Ang Lee came on the programme just
yes,
before Christmas.
But the thing that everybody knows about it, who doesn't know anything about films and has never interviewed Ang Lee,
it's quite lusty.
Dirty. It's got some dirty scenes in it. And the
explicit
thing is,
I think. Is
yeah, sexually explicit scenes. It's a long film. It's 2 hours and 40 minutes long, which is the new 2 hours and 20 minutes long, I've noticed. There's a huge amount of films coming out that are 2 hours and 40 minutes long. American Gangster has already come in at that length. You've got to really work hard to fill that amount of time, and you better be good, and this is good enough to fill it. But it has got some sex scenes in it, which people are all talking about. So if you read an interview with Ang Lee, all they talk about is the sex scenes. Let's see if it's just about that. And let me tell you, it is not. It has three sex scenes in it, all bunched together. The rest of it is this quite long and involved and intelligent period drama. And it tells you a lot about the Japanese-Chinese conflict during World War II, which is not covered very much, certainly not covered in Hollywood films very often. So at least you learn something along the way. Period detail beautifully done. Fantastic performances by a newcomer who I don't even think has made a film before, called Tang Wei. And she plays this girl who is orphaned and is very good at amateur dramatics. And the amateur dramatics group that she works for, basically they get together and decide to become resistance and use their acting skills to try and assassinate the chief of police, who's a Japanese collaborationist called Tony Leung. He's played by Tony Leung. Mr. Yi, he's called. And it's basically about that, the way she manoeuvres around him and basically gets him into bed. And their relationship then sort of changes slightly. It's a very, very interesting story based on a short story by Eileen Chang. Can't say I know her work, but I think if you're in China, you would know. And it's got an NC-17 rating in America, which puts it in the same category as pornography.
And is that valid?
Well, it depends. I mean, you know, it may be censored probably in China. I imagine there is a cut version of it, which is probably one playing in Ang Lee's.
There is. In fact, Ang Lee said he has to do that. He does the edited version.
Yeah, but he refused to edit the one for the American market. And so it's gone out with an NC-17 rating, which is, they say, is box office poison. I don't know why. But, I mean, frankly, anyone going in there for pornographic reasons will be,
so will it be an
massively
18
disappointed. Yeah, but, you know, it's not cut here. And we're obviously allowed to see it. But for some reason, that will scare people off in America.
Is there more lust than caution?
There's more caution than lust.
Really?
Yeah. But the lust is key to the story. And, you know, these are explicit scenes. What always annoys me is that when any mainstream film comes out, and this is a mainstream film, albeit Chinese, is that they always ask the question, did the actors really do it? To which the answer is always no. And the reason no is because they're actors. They don't need to really do it. If they really did it, that would be a different job. And so, no, they didn't, in case anyone's asking that question already. Really worth seeing.
I'm never quite sure of the use of punctuation in the film title.
Oh, I like it, but you don't get it very much. Lust, comma, caution. Now, somebody will tell us this. Do you get commas in Chinese writing when it's written down? Because, you know, an anglicised version of the Chinese title will have a comma in it, but do you have? I really don't know. It's a question that I'm hoping your listeners will tell me.
The title is not punctuated in Chinese.
It's not.
But now I am reliably informed that the Chinese language is not punctuated.
Really? That's very interesting, you see. So we've decided that it needs a comma, Lust Caution. But, yes. Go and see it.
Regardless. If you're old enough.
If you're old enough, yeah, of course, don't if you're not. Okay. You have to go to see St Trinian's if you're not old enough.
Lust Caution, then, is out, and we'll get some response to that. Thanks for the emails coming in. We'll do some text, 85058. What are you going to do next, Andrew? Have some travel, and then...
Yeah, we're then going to do P.S. I Love You.
P.S. I Love You in just a second. Good fun for all the family. Just like Nick Duncuff with some travel, then we'll be back with Andrew Collins.
Thank you. Let's have a look at...
Lust Caution has been dealt with. What else is out, Andrew?
I should mention, by the way, there's a lot of Mahjong in Lust Caution. I think they'll probably shift quite a few packs of Mahjong tiles off the back of it.
An interesting spin-off.
Yeah, I'd like to play it. It looks very good. Sort of intellectual dominoes by the looks of it. So, P.S. I Love You. Now, this is a romantic comedy. It's a romantic comedy, and it is based on a book, P.S. I Love You, by Cecilia Ahern, daughter of Bertie Ahern, which is a massive bestseller. It was her first book. She was 21 when she wrote it. The fact she was 21 when she wrote it may explain this sort of weird view on romance that comes through. It's about a woman whose boyfriend dies of a brain tumour at the very beginning, and before he died, he leaves her a series of letters which are to be opened at intervals to help her get over his death. Now, if that sounds to you like a really creepy idea for a romantic comedy, does it?
Yeah, does it? I instantly don't want to go and see this film.
Now, to like this film, which stars Hilary Swank, let's not forget double Oscar-winning Hilary Swank, and the bloke who dies is an Irishman, apparently, a musician, a freewheeling Irish musician called Jerry, played by Gerard Butler, who was previously in 300. I don't know if you saw 300, but anyway, he was in that.
Was he well-oiled?
He was totally well-oiled in that. A great big, muscly bloke. Well, here, he is a Scotsman. He's born in Glasgow, but he does the worst Irish accent you've ever heard, worse than any American actor. And hopefully you'll enjoy a bit of it.
Is it worse than Sean Connery's?
Yeah, because it has no kind of charm to it. Now, here is a clip of these two before he dies, obviously. And it goes on a bit, but I think we should enjoy it, because it's the only English language film we're doing this week. Let's enjoy this clip. This is Hilary Swank and Gerard Butler. Now, after it's finished, tell me whether you wish one of them had a brain tumour.
My mother said it was a mistake marrying you, because I loved you too much. It won't last. I don't want to make any mistakes, Jerry.
Well, you're in the wrong species, love. Be a duck. Oh, Lord, baby. We're not a mistake. And we are going to last. You know how I know? Because I still wake up every morning, and the first thing I want to do is see your face.
Oh, I'm sorry. I see people buying bigger apartments and having babies. I get so afraid sometimes our life's never going to start.
Baby, we're already in our life. It's already started. This is it. You have to stop waiting, baby. And all. You can't keep eating me head off, telling me to leave. I'm not going anywhere.
Eating me head off.
Alvin and the Chipmunks. The Return, that's what I'm going to go and see, I think.
Well, there's no humour in that. Obviously, it's a romantic comedy. The comedy begins at his funeral, which comes pretty much after that first scene where they have an argument and then make up. And he does this thing. He comes out and does an endearing thing to make her laugh. And it is coming out with just his boxer shorts on and some braces. And he does a little dance where, because you know the story is about him dying, you're so willing that to happen. And at the funeral, which is a wake, and of course he's Irish, you've got loads of American Irish there wishing they were back in the old country. And it's actually set in Dublin. The book's set in Dublin. It's an Irish story, but they've moved it to New York. And so, of course, she has to go back to Ireland, to the old country, where she falls in love with a musician who used to be in his band when he was there. Now, I have a confession to make. I was going to say it's one of the worst films I've seen for a long time.
This year.
Certainly this year. It's the worst film of 2008 so far. When I was seeing it, screening just before Christmas in a screening theatre in Soho in London, there was a power cut. And two-thirds into the film stopped. And a man had to come out and say, I'm really sorry, there's been a power cut, we can't get the projector back working. That's it. And there was audible noises of relief coming from all the
assembled film critics. It might be that the last third is sensational.
That's why I'm not going to say it's utterly without merit, because it might really pick up at the end. But I know for the fact that when Hilary Swank and her American mates, Gina Gershon and an absolutely useless Lisa Kudrow, go to Ireland, I'll probably have been physically sick. Because that kind of thing really gets me going.
So the chances of you paying your own money and
going to see the last bit,
just to catch up the last bit,
is not going to happen. But I will leave that open, because it's not right of me, having not seen the whole film, to say that it's absolutely without merit.
Well, we've only got 8 minutes left, and as it's P.S. I Love You is already at number nine.
It's already at number nine.
Limited release. If you could review the last third of P.S. I Love You, if you could get it in as quickly as you can, please, because we're off it very shortly. So yeah. If you've seen the last third, can you just let Andrew know? I mean, don't tell us what happened.
No, God, no.
Give us some kind of review of the last third, and then we'll be able to complete that sequence.
Yeah.
Just based on our typo game, which we're revisiting, as I mentioned earlier, because a lot of people heard it for the first time on our Best Of a special over Christmas. Colin in Manchester has suggested It's a Wonderful Loaf. We've also got Charlie in Northampton. I quite like his idea. Roger Rabbi.
Yeah, that's good. I've heard that before.
The Green Mole from Colin in Manchester. But Ali, I like this. Says, my wife and I listened to the Christmas podcast yesterday. We've had a go at the game. The best of these that we came up with is I'm Not Three, the Bob Dylan biopic covering his life from the age of four onwards.
That's very good.
Keep up the good work. And this from David in Nottingham. How about Coprophile Dundee, in which a big-hearted outback...
You don't need to go any further with that.
Failing that, how about City of God? City of Cod, I beg your pardon.
Yeah, come on.
Physio, Days of Chunder, Bridget Jones Dairy, The Wrath of Grapes, I Spit on Your Gravy. I'm going to read the others before I actually get there. But you get the idea. Still want that last third of P.S. I Love You. Thank you very much indeed. So, Andrew, what else do we have? We've done all the English movies, but maybe we'll move on to better material.
Yeah, well, you know, since Lost Caution is the best film of the week, and that's in Mandarin Chinese, the second best film of the week is a reissue. Not a reissue. It came out in 1973. Alice in the City is by Wim Wenders, who was a couple of years out of college and yet to become the huge director that he became when Paris, Texas came out. And he started to make films like Wings of Desire and stuff like that. He's a bit uneven, but he was brilliant when he first came out. This, of course, could be Lice in the Cities, if we wanted to play the typo game with it. It's about a photographer who's... it's a black and white film, very grainy, very cheap looking, but really, really fantastic. It's about this photographer who's driving across America. He's German, and he's basically completely disappointed with the place. And he ends up going back to Germany via Amsterdam with a young girl who is basically foisted upon him by a woman he meets at the airport. Now, you have to accept that that might have happened in those days without eyebrows being raised. A stranger takes your daughter back to Amsterdam, but nevertheless, it's an innocent film. There's no kind of underlying tension there. It's just an adult and a young girl who's played by a real girl called Yella Rotlander, who I don't think really acted since. She's amazing. He learns things about his life, but not in a Hollywood way. There's no kind of easy ending on this one. I have seen this through to the end, by the way. And it's a charming film. And it makes you think, God, they really did make fantastic films, the Germans, in the 70s.
New correspondents suggest that there is punctuation in Chinese.
Is there? That's interesting.
Though we'll get some kind of...
I said that's interesting, because I actually really do think it is interesting. Others may disagree.
Now, yes, we are getting various thoughts based on the last third of P.S. I Love You. Most of it boils down... here's a typical one. It's a load of swank, is being suggested for the last third of P.S. I Love You. Anyway, so is that it? So we've got Lust, Caution, Alice in the City, P.S. I Love You. What else is out?
Yeah, that's it. If you want to talk about anything else, we could talk about all the Ace films that are coming out after today.
On that subject, having gone to see the Will Smith movie, I Am Legend, they do include now some very interesting trails for the big stuff that's coming up later in 2008. Yep. One of the intriguing ones, I'm hoping we're going to speak to Tom Hanks on the programme next week.
Brilliant.
He's got Charlie Wilson's War.
Yep.
What can you tell us about the stuff that you have been told that's going to be coming out, which will be the blockbuster hits of 2008?
Well, there might not be the big hits, but we've got the Golden Globe nominations in, which always give a suggestion of what the Oscars might be. And there are a couple of films that have yet to arrive here. One of them is Charlie Wilson's War. The other important one is the Coen Brothers' new film, which is No Country for Old Men, based on the Cormac McCarthy book, I'm seeing it next week. It's apparently not just a return to form, it just blows all their other films away, especially the poor ones they've made recently. So that's worth... We haven't got to wait long for that. That's only a couple couple of weeks away. And there's a film called There Will Be Blood, which I've seen, another film of 2 hours and 40 minutes long, an epic by Paul Thomas Anderson, who did Magnolia and Boogie Nights. So no stranger to a long film.
And is it a typical really. Offering from him? Because there's Magnolia was a wonderful film.
I think some people hate Magnolia. I know people who think it's absolutely appalling. I absolutely loved it. That, though, was a film about lots of different stories. This one is also set in California, but at the turn of the last century. And it's about oil, discovery of oil, and how that changed everything. And it's really based on this performance by Daniel Day-Lewis, which it seems really dull to say it has Oscar written all the way through it, but it really does. I think he just knows. When he comes out and does a performance, he better get an Oscar nomination for it, or else what's the point of being an actor? And that really comes through. It's a marvellous epic. It really is like an old film made by John Huston or someone like that. Most of it is shot outdoors in Texas, which still looks as California did then, before oil changed it. And there's huge epic stuff. It's like Gone with the Wind, some of it. It's really amazing.
Does Amy Mann do any of the music for it?
No, I think it's possible. No, the music's done by Johnny Greenwood of Radiohead, and that is an amazing thing in itself. So I highly recommend that. I know somebody who works at Radio 4 who saw it and had to go and see it again immediately.
Because
there's just so much in it. You want to see it again. When you see the ending, you want to see the beginning again, just because you know that it's going to be this man's life story and how it all fits together. It's an amazing thing. So that is, as I say, it's got a few Golden Globe nominations. We'll probably get Oscar nominations.
Have you seen, what can you tell us about Sweeney Todd? Again, this is just something that we saw a trail for a couple of days ago.
Well, that looks great.
Absolutely extraordinary.
Yeah, and this is Johnny Depp and Tim Burton. It's about time they work together, isn't it, on something. And he's basically playing the demon barber of Fleet Street. And it's a musical. It's a hit musical in America. It hasn't been here yet. We haven't had that, but I dare say we will get it. So it's basically just like Chicago or Spamalot or one of those, but it's just become a film.
And his wife has been cast again as a
Helena Bonham Carter.
Harridan.
Yeah, it's a bit dull in a way. Tim Burton makes a film, Helena Bonham Carter's in it, and so's Johnny Depp. But there you go. You know, some things work, so I break them.
Now, the other headline-grabbing move. Thank you to Andrew in Northampton, by the way. Another Andrew in Northampton.
Yeah.
Nuns on the Rum.
That's good.
Has been suggested. The other big movies that are going to take your fancy, Andrew, do you
think? Well, Cloverfield. We all want to see Cloverfield. This has been one of those viral campaigns where the trailer has been out for ages without even a title. Well, now it's called Cloverfield. Now, J.J. Abrams, who made Lost, produced it. And it's got no famous people in it. It's about New York being attacked by a thing. We don't know what it is. It's a fantastic trailer. Many people will have seen it already on the internet. Go and look at it now if you haven't.
What is it then?
It's just, you know, they're having a party in an apartment in New York, and there's this noise, and the lights go out, and then the head of the Statue of Liberty is blown off and it bounces down the road. It's one of those. And as I say, it's not got any big stars in it, but it looks to be massively interesting.
What is it that's landed then?
We don't know. Somebody says, it's a lion. And you think, wow, it's a giant lion. I want to go and see this film. But apparently he actually says, it's alive. It's a monster of some kind. We've got to see it.
And Chris says, the last third of P.S. I Love You is a masterpiece. It's better than Citizen Kane. Everything falls into place. Subtle, rich, brilliant, and so on. So you
and
do have
German.
To go and see it.
Yeah, I'm going to see it. It becomes black and white in German.
Andrew, thanks very much indeed. All the details are on the website.
Thanks for downloading from the BBC. To find other downloads or more information, go online.
bbc.co.uk/5live.